Usually when we talk about a crime being committed, there's this expectation of visible evidence,
Right,
right?
like a smoking gun.
Exactly. I mean, if you picture a bank robbery, you have the shattered glass, the empty vault, the security footage of a guy sprinting out in a ski mask.
It's very obvious. Clean.
Yeah, it's stolen or not stolen. But then you step into the world of federal corruption, and suddenly that security camera is just like covered in a thick layer of Vaseline.
That is a very accurate way to put it, actually. It's incredibly murky.
It really is. So welcome to this deep dive, by the way. I am so thrilled you're joining us today because we are unpacking a really fascinating legal text called Defining Federal Corruption.
And this text really gets into how the U.S. Supreme Court is essentially redrawing the boundaries of what actually constitutes a federal crime.
Right, which is huge. I mean, whether you are a business owner bidding on contracts, a voter, watching your local elections, or just someone trying to understand the evening news, the definition of corruption is shifting right under our feet.
It really is.
And we are going to decode exactly how and why that's happening today. But to understand that shift, we kind of have to look at the starting point, right?
Yeah, we do. Because the United States doesn't actually have one single overarching federal anti-corruption statute.
Which, just to pause there, seems wild for a country this size.
It does sound wild. There's no master rule book you can just pull off a shelf that says, here is the exact definition of corruption.
So what do we have instead?
Well, it's a patchwork of overlapping laws. We're talking about things like bribery offenses, property fraud, extortion, money laundering,
Okay, all the
right,
classics.
the classics. But there's also a very heavily used statute called honest services fraud.
Okay, wait, let me stop you right there because bribery and money laundering, I mean, those make sense to me. But what exactly is honest services fraud? That sounds incredibly broad.
It was designed to be broad, honestly. Basically, the idea is that the public has a right to the quote-unquote honest services of their government officials.
Oh, I see.
So imagine you hire a manager to run your store,
Right.
and they secretly take kickbacks from a supplier to buy inferior products.
Okay, yeah.
They didn't necessarily steal cash directly from your register, but they robbed you of their honest, uncompromised decision-making.
Got it. So prosecutors probably love this rule.
Oh, they have loved this statute for decades because it allowed them to target shady, unethical behavior without always having to find, like, a direct wire transfer of stolen tax dollars.
Right. And real quick, just to set the ground rules for you listening today, because we are talking about political figures and corruption. I want to be super clear. We don't care about the R or D next to anyone's name.
Absolutely not.
Right. We are not taking a political side here. We are just hopping the hood to look at the mechanics of the law, keeping it entirely impartial. We're looking at the engine, not the driver.
And that's a very necessary distinction to make because this legal engine is currently being overhauled by the courts. For years, enforcement agencies used that overlapping patchwork we talked about to cast a really wide net. But the Supreme Court is currently wrestling with how far these broadly worded laws should reach into, private political influence or state and local governments.
So, because there's no single rule book, prosecutors have historically just tried to stretch these existing laws to cover what we'd all consider bad behavior.
Exactly.
Let's look at our first case study, which shows what happens when the Supreme Court says a law is stretched too far. Where do we start?
We start with the question of who actually owes that duty of honesty to the public. And that brings us to a May 2023 decision, Prococo v. United States.
Okay.
This arose from New York's Buffalo Billion Economic Development Initiative. The central figure here is Joseph Prococo, who was a senior aide to the New York governor.
Okay, let's unpack this. So he's on the state payroll. He clearly owes the public his honest services, right?
Ordinarily, yes.
Yeah.
But here is the timeline. The timeline is everything. In 2014, he temporarily leaves his official government role to run the governor's reelection campaign.
Got it. So he steps away.
Right. During this specific private interval, when he is off the state payroll, a development company approaches him. They are struggling with a labor-related requirement on a publicly supported project, and they arrange to pay Prococo $35,000, which they route through his wife's consulting business.
Oh, wow. Okay, so money changes hands while he's technically a civilian. What happens next?
Well, while still formally working for the campaign, not the state, Prococo calls up a senior state official and urges the agency to drop that labor requirement for the developer.
Wait, really?
Yes. And shortly after that phone call, The agency reverses course and does exactly what he asked.
Wait, if a guy takes $35,000 to lean on a state agency, how is that not a crime just because he's technically on campaign leave for a few months?
Well, the prosecutors agreed with you. They charged him with Honest Services wire fraud. Mm-hmm. They claimed he had a special relationship and still owed a fiduciary duty to the public because of his massive influence.
Right, because it's like trying to referee a game where the rulebook is just a collection of sticky notes from different decades. I mean, at what point does having friends in high places become a federal offense?
It's a completely understandable frustration. And the trial jury actually convicted him.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
But when it reached the Supreme Court, they threw out that conviction. And, you know, they calmly clarified the why here. The court isn't saying the behavior is good or ethical.
Right.
They're saying that criminal offenses must give people fair notice.
Meaning you have to know the law exists before you break it.
Basically, yes. If ordinary people can't tell when standard political access becomes criminal responsibility, the law is just too vague. Think about it. Political systems are full of influential private citizens,
yeah.
Lobbyists, former officials, relatives.
Oh, I see. So if the law is just you have a lot of influence, that's too blurry.
Exactly. You can't put someone in federal prison based on a blurry line.
Okay, so if Prococo showed us that an undefined duty isn't enough to convict someone, what about the victim side?
Right, the pivot to property.
Yeah. If corruption isn't just about who you are, it must be about what you take. Which brings us to the concept of property. So what does this all mean in practice?
Well, this leads us to a concurrent May 2023 case, also from the Buffalo Billion Initiative. It's called Simonelli v. United States.
Okay, set the scene for this one. Who is Simonelli?
Louis Simonelli was an executive at a construction company. His company participated in a procurement process for a state project. And the prosecutors alleged that this entire process was secretly rigged from the start to favor preferred developers, like Simonelli's company.
So they charged him with stealing taxpayer money through a rigged contract, right?
Yeah.
That seems straightforward.
You would think so, right?
Yeah.
But no, they used this angle called the right to control theory.
Wait, the right to control what?
The prosecutors argued that the victim, the public, was deprived of valuable economic information, the information needed to make informed decisions.
Wait, information? They treated information as stolen property.
Yes. The Supreme Court unanimously rejected this, all nine justices. They said federal fraud statutes protect traditional money or property. An abstract right to accurate information isn't property.
I mean, I can kind of see why, because if I lie to my boss about being sick so I can go to a concert, did I commit federal wire fraud because I deprived the company of valuable information regarding its payroll?
That is the exact slippery slope the court wanted to avoid.
Yeah, that sounds like the ultimate slippery slope. It would turn every breached contract or, like, workplace lie into a federal crime.
Exactly. And the government actually realized this late in the game. They tried to change their theory and tell the Supreme Court, well, actual public funds were eventually stolen.
Oh, they tried to swap the charges.
They did. But the court said, no, you can't swap out the legal basis after the jury has already been instructed and the trial is over.
Wow. Okay, so duty has to be concrete and property has to be real. But what about the timing of the payoff? Does it matter when the money actually changes hands?
It matters tremendously. Which brings us to a 2024 decision, Snyder v. United States.
Okay.
This case narrows a very specific statute, 18 U.S.C. Section 666. It involves organizations that receive significant federal funds.
So most local governments, basically.
Pretty much. The court had to decide if this statute covers bribes versus gratuities.
What's the legal difference there?
Well, a bribe is a corrupt exchange agreed upon for an official act. A gratuity is a reward provided after the fact without proving there was an earlier agreement.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because isn't this just giving a green light to wink and nod corruption?
How so?
Like, a politician could just say, hey, don't pay me now to vote for your bill. Just, you know, send me a very heavy cash-filled gift basket next week. How can investigators possibly prove what was in someone's head before the fact?
That is the big fear. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But it's important to clarify, this ruling doesn't make gratuities universally lawful.
Oh, it doesn't.
No, not at all. State ethics rules or local city ordinances might still completely ban them. It just means this one specific federal statute cannot be used as a catch-all federal gratuities law.
Okay, but what about the wink and nod scenario?
Well, timing is important, but it's not conclusive. a payment made afterward can absolutely still be used as evidence of an earlier corrupt agreement.
I see.
Investigators just have to do the legwork to prove the quid pro quo was actually agreed upon beforehand.
Right. They need the texts, the emails, that sort of thing. So with Percoco, Simonelli, and Snyder, a listener might think the Supreme Court is just letting everyone off the hook.
It definitely looks like a trend. But in 2025, the pendulum swings back. They drew a hard line to show they aren't just legalizing fraud.
What happened in 2025?
The case is Cusesis v. United States. A contractor lied about using a disadvantaged business to win government painting contracts.
Let me guess, they just used them as a pass-through on paper.
Exactly, they used them as a pass-through. But here's the catch. The physical painting was done perfectly. The government got the freshly painted buildings they paid for.
Oh, so the defendants were like, no harm, no foul. We did the painting, so there was no net financial loss.
That was their exact argument.
Ah, so it's like selling someone a counterfeit Rolex.
Yes.
Even if it keeps perfect time and the buyer technically got a working watch, they still got tricked into handing over their money based on a material lie.
That is a perfect analogy.
Yeah.
And the court upheld the conviction based on that exact logic.
Yep.
Unlike Simonelli, where the government tried to say information was property, in Cusesis, actual government money was the object of the scheme.
Right, because they used material deception to get real money, which is fraud, even if the painting was fine.
Exactly.
Okay, so now that we know the Supreme Court has set these extremely specific, narrow rules, how do investigators and businesses actually operate in the real world? Like, how do you catch corruption when the target is this small?
It requires a massive shift. Investigations now have to be completely evidence-led.
What does that look like?
It means building precise chronologies. You have to trace financial evidence through spouses or sham contracts, just like we saw in Percoco. And you have to actively test legitimate explanations.
It's like separating actual advocacy from a corrupt exchange.
Right. And for organizations and financial institutions, they have to build what's called a resilient control stack.
Okay, this control stack sounds intense. If I'm a mid-level manager at a company interacting with local government, how much of this due diligence am I personally on the hook for? I mean, do I need to be mapping out the family trees of every consultant we hire?
No, you don't need to hire a private investigator. The control stack is an institutional framework. It involves layers like public sector relationship mapping, role-sensitive due diligence, because remember, people change jobs, like Percoco going on campaign leave.
Right, the context changes.
Exactly. It also includes payment validation and third-party governance. The big takeaway here is that public corruption usually succeeds when influence, payment, and action are examined separately.
So the institution has to reconnect those elements.
Yes. The systems have to flag when those three things align suspiciously.
Wow. Okay, so if we're synthesizing the core lesson here, the Supreme Court isn't saying unethical public conduct is okay now.
Not at all. They are forcing the government to be incredibly precise. Prosecutors can no longer rely on these broad concepts of unfairness. They have to prove the exact duty, the exact property, and the exact exchange.
Which leaves me with a final, somewhat provocative thought for you listening. If federal prosecutors are being forced to be this incredibly precise and federal laws are shrinking, will we start seeing a massive shift where states and local municipalities have to entirely rewrite their own local laws?
That is the big question.
Yeah, because to catch the people slipping through these new federal cracks, it might be up to the locals. So keep an eye on your local city council.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We really hope this helped decode some of the headlines you've been seeing. We'll catch you on the next one.